This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, producer Tom, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
And just, I can't do this. We lost someone today. We lost that Jay Inslee we've all grown to learn to love. The Jay Inslee who thought that he could be president. But millions of people last night, they got breaking news alerts on their phones or in their emails, explaining to them that our governor, I can't do this, and our governor, Jay Inslee, he dropped out of the presidential race. And in one single moment, there was a collective sound all across this country, and it went like this. Huh? Who's Jay Inslee? Oh, we knew who Jay Inslee was. Oh, Jay Inslee is done.
Did he die?
No. Well, his campaign for presidency died.
Oh.
Like, his dreams died.
So that funeral music
was for his campaign.
Okay.
I mean, he's okay. I mean, mentally, I don't know how he's doing. I'm assuming emotionally, it's going to be rough. And I sympathize with that to a degree. There was one time when I ran for student government. And I never lost when I ran. So I actually don't know what it's like to lose.
Well, you've lost a lot of friends.
Yeah, but that's true. That's true. But still, not on the scale of losing a presidential election. Now, the only good thing in all of this, for Jay Inslee at least, is that when he lost, yes, technically he lost on a national stage, but no one knew who he was, which is why he lost, why he decided to call it quits. Because when you've only got 0.3-0.4% of the vote, according to virtually every single poll out there, at some point you're just going to recognize, oh, well, you know, good news is not that many people knew I stopped running because not that many people knew I was running to begin with. Now, he made, of course, the announcement not here in Washington State, his home. He decided to go on the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC.
But I understand that you are here tonight to make some news.
I am.
Oh, and by the way, it's my understanding. You know, just go ahead and say. So what's the status of your campaign? It's my producers, they kept it away from me. They won't even tell me what the news was. What do you have to say?
This show has been so good to me. This is sort of the bookends of my campaign. We started saying that climate change had to be the number one job in the United States.
Uh-huh.
I felt very good saying that the first days of my campaign.
Mm-hmm. And the second and the third and the fourth and really the entirety of your campaign, with the exception of that one moment when they were asking you at the debate stage, what's the biggest threat to the United States? And rather than say the one thing that you would have gotten a really good applause line out of, you decided to change your topic all of a sudden in your talking point and go to Donald Trump.
I feel very good saying that now.
Oh,
and the reason is this has just become more urgent.
Oh,
a billion
just get
tons
to
of
it.
Ice melted
oh,
in
my
Greenland,
gosh.
The other day. But we also have had so many people I've met who are inspiring, who want us to act, who've helped me. We had 130,000
wow.
people helped me in this campaign.
None of whom apparently told pollsters that they supported you, but continue.
But it's become clear that I'm not going to be carrying the ball. I'm not going to be the president, so I'm withdrawing tonight.
Real quick, let it be known, and producer Tom, you'll go ahead and check the record officially. The second he announced, I went on the air and I said he's not going to become the president. Now, granted, I'm one of the smartest people in the world because I've got a talk show, and talk show hosts are inherently the smartest people in the world, especially the ones that I like, and especially the ones in this room right now. You don't have to be that smart. You don't have to be a fortune teller to understand that he was never going to become president. Everyone around him, including people who were fans otherwise of his work here in Washington State, are like, not going to work. Not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I see that, you know, right in this Jason Predicts the Future book. Right next to, you'll have a fourth appearance on the Tucker Carlson Show by mid-August.
I've been on six times. You might want to update that joke.
I've been on three times.
That's not true.
Three times.
That's 100% not
true. Two times with Tucker, one time with Tammy Bruce.
I've been on at least three times with Tucker.
two times.
No, one of the times was when he was doing it from, where was he? North Korea. That was my third or fourth time. You're wrong.
See,
you're
very positive.
You know, shut up. Shut your face.
From the race. But I have to tell you, look, I've been fighting climate change for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Has he? Just real quick, carbon emissions got worse under Governor Jay Inslee. We're going to talk about that in a second with Benji Backer when he stops by.
And I've never been so confident of the ability of America now to reach critical mass to move the ball. I believe we are going to have a candidate to fight this battle.
Uh-huh.
I'm inspired of the people I've met across the country.
Too bad you didn't inspire them.
The young people in the Sunrise Movement and the climate strikers. These people have given me confidence we can move ahead. So I'm not going to be carrying the ball, but we're going to make sure somebody is.
Okay. I like that. We're going to make sure somebody else is going to be the nominee for president on the Democratic side. Now, what I find particularly disturbing about this, I made the point last night on Twitter, is that Jay Inslee continued to raise money over the course of the last several days, knowing he was going to drop out of the race. So he still went out there knowing that he was going to drop out of the race, asking people to give him money, which, by the way, he gets to keep. You know, he can't use it for personal issues, right? He was like, I'm going to go pay my Comcast bill. That's not what he can use it for. But he can use it to either give to other candidates. He can use it on his own future candidacy. So he's going to be able to use this. And he says that, you know what, I'm going to support whomever the Democratic nominee is going to be, but they're going to need to address climate change a little bit more than they currently are.
Oh, I'm going to support the Democratic nominee. There's
no
nothing
matter who
more
it
important.
Is.
You bet it is. I know these candidates. Every single one of them is 100% better than the current occupant, no question about that.
Even Marianne Williamson? I mean, he doesn't believe that, right?
I'm not endorsing a candidate tonight. I think a number of them have intriguing ideas.
Oh.
But we need all of them to raise their game. And here's the reason.
I'll let the governor finish, because I guess he's earned the right to make his own announcement. Is Jay Inslee in the best place to tell other candidates what they need to do in order to win this election? I'm just throwing that out there. He's the dude. He's one of the earliest people to get out of the race. He is one of the leaders in getting the least amount of people supporting him. So I suppose he's got that win under his belt. It kind of feels like you should not be offering any advice. Or I suppose you can offer the advice. I'm just hoping, you know, for anyone out there who likes Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, like, that they're not listening to your advice?
You know, you can argue with politicians, but you can't argue with science. Oh. And the science is clear.
Except
look,
when it comes
to
biology.
Siberia on fire, which it is
today, he doesn't know where Siberia is.
When you have heat waves, when it's 108 in Paris,
that's not
when
that
the
hot.
Everglades, the day we landed in Miami for the debate that you moderated, 40,000 acres of a swamp was on fire. So we can't argue with science.
None of what he just said was actually scientific. He just goes, things were on fire. That's science, folks. Oh, I mean, okay. So now this is the time we play audio from other candidates weighing in on this. Here's a clip of Elizabeth. Oh, we don't have Elizabeth Warren?
No, no one knew.
Okay. Who played the clip of Bernie Sanders reacting?
I don't think there is one.
Oh, Joe Biden?
He didn't say anything. Not that I saw, no.
But Andrew Yang must have said something. I saw him tweet.
No, he has tweeted, just not about this.
Oh, do we have like a 30-second clip from Fox News or CNN or MSNBC other than this clip to announce that he's out and how it's going to have shock waves across the Democratic No?
No.
Did you go to the astral plane and ask Marianne Williamson if she's got something to say?
I'm sure she has something to say, but probably not about James.
Okay. So no one really noticed, except for us here in Washington State, because now we have to deal with the fact that he wants to run for governor for a third term, an announcement he made earlier today. We're going to get into that in about an hour from now when Caleb Heimlich stops by. He, of course, is the pride of Puyallup. He is the Washington State GOP chairman. What exactly is the Republican plan to defeat Governor Jay Inslee, an incumbent who returned to Washington State once the country nationally said, we don't want anything to do with you. But I guess we're still here welcoming him. We'll talk about that in a bit. Don't forget, you can follow us on Instagram. to fire up the Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Give me a follow. I'll take you behind the scenes of the show and yet again our studio situation where I'm forced to stare directly into producer Tom's not dreamy eyes at all. It's just very awkward. He just won't stop staring directly at me because we're having some studio problems in the other room.
First of all, they're beautiful eyes. And so second of all, I don't want them looking at you. Unfortunately, I'm kind of forced to because you're right in front of me.
So you can see what it's like from my perspective on Instagram. Go to Instagram on your app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Governor Jay Inslee is no longer running his failed presidential campaign, finally realizing it's the failure we've all been saying it is from the start. But what exactly did he do for climate change? Did he help or hurt the cause? Joining me on the line is Benji Backer. He's a president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition. Benji, thank you so much for coming on.
Great to be on this afternoon.
So Jay Inslee is saying that he brought a lot of attention to climate change and that we're all better for it. Do you agree with that?
I don't. And I've said this before, but I believe that there definitely is a need for a presidential candidate to make climate change a large part of their platform. There's no doubt about it. Young people care about it on both sides of the aisle. But he just didn't pick up any steam. And I honestly don't even think most people in Washington who are, you know, looking at this campaign from afar knew that he was a part of it. There are a lot of people who just do not pay attention to Governor Inslee because he doesn't have a winning message. And the reason he doesn't have a winning message is because he doesn't have a proven track record to back it up. And if he's going to run on climate change, which was his number one issue for this campaign, you have to run on it with a proven track record. He didn't have that. He didn't stick because of that. And the voice on climate change that he was hoping to have just did not stick whatsoever.
Yeah, and he made this comment a little bit earlier today to reporters. Listen to it.
We have elevated the climate change crisis to where it belongs to be. And I'm very proud to have served for that purpose. We now are going to have it debated in many forums. I have called other candidates to raise their ambitions.
It's just kind of weird because all the other candidates were already talking about climate change. And it's absolutely true that Inslee made it his signature issue, but he wasn't even invited to the debate on climate change. So it doesn't matter that he was talking about it. No one was listening.
Exactly. And you had candidates who were putting this in their top five or top 10 who got way more coverage on climate change than he did. And you have people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and actually many Republicans who get more much more conversation in the public eye on climate change than Jay Inslee ever did. And again, the reason behind that is because he takes the place of not really being able to truthfully talk about the issue. If he had gone out in Washington State and made a huge dent on climate change and emissions reduction and doing great things for climate change, I think he would have been elevated like he had hoped. But because it was just a talking point and one that's helped him get elected in Washington, he thought he could apply that to the national level. And that's just something that wasn't going to stick. You and I both knew that from the get-go. A lot of others knew that from the get-go. And if he was hoping to make a big splash, he had to have done something positive for climate change in the past. He has not done that, and that's why he failed, and that's why others who have talked about climate change have a lot more credibility because they're actually doing things on the issues. No matter if they're Democrats or Republicans, they're talking about the issues, but they're also introducing bills, they're co-sponsoring legislation, they're putting together proposals. The governor did not do that, and everything he had done in the past in Washington State had ultimately failed, and he had no record again to run on.
Yeah, and I think he was planning on his carbon tax initiative actually passing, and yet it miserably failed in Washington State, which is a state you would think would be open to that kind of progressive idea as it relates to the economy. It didn't actually pass, and so he was kind of left without that signature accomplishment, because to your point, we've had this conversation before. I mean, kind of just implied it. Carbon emissions actually went up in the state of Washington under his tenure, and now he's coming back here saying, oh, I do actually want to become governor again. And, you know, I don't know beyond this talking point that it's his signature issue he cares about. Voters here care. They seem to just be, oh, okay, well, you care about it. Cool. Here's a vote.
Yep, exactly. And I think if he was hoping – that's exactly right. If he was hoping to get elected on the national scale, he needed a win. The biggest opportunity he had for a win was the revenue-neutral carbon policy effort back in 2016, which a lot of conservatives supported, and he was very reluctant to go in on that piece of legislation and that policy proposal. That would have been his opportunity to show to the rest of the country, hey, we could get this done in Washington State with bipartisan support, reduce emissions. If he really wanted that to be his rhetoric, he could have made it that way.
Yeah.
But instead, he decided to go with trying to grow the government and really try to make it just a talking point. And again, I think it's more about the actual rhetoric for him than it is about the actual impact. Because if he was truthfully and authentically interested in reducing emissions, he would have done it already, and he would have supported bipartisan pieces of legislation. But instead, he's pushed politics over policy,
mm-hmm.
and it's just really hurt him on the national stage. And unfortunately for the climate, it hasn't helped the climate at all either, because he's used it just as a talking point to wedge him and put him up to the national stage and not actually accomplish anything.
Benji Backer is the president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition. It is a conservative environmentalist group. To learn more about the ACC, go to acc.eco, acc.eco. Benji, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So the Seattle Police Department now have a registry up. It's called smart911.com, and it's all to combat something called swatting. Sergeant Sean Whitcomb tells Cairo 7 TV.
People are using police as a weapon against unsuspecting innocent individuals.
So this is how swatting works. Let's say I'm mad at producer Tom for lying about the amount of times I went on the Tucker Carlson show on Fox News. He is undercutting me. And let's say I'm just really pissed off about that because it hurts my ego that he doesn't remember all the brilliant times that I've been on. I would call, if I'm swatting Tom, I would call 911 and say something like, a crime is in progress at Tom's address where he lives. So cops then get that call. Obviously, assuming I'm not lying to them on the phone, so they'll go to Tom's home and maybe they'll have their guns out ready to engage, because depending on what it is I said, they get into the home, they're, you know, kind of on high alert, and then they interact with you. You have no clue what's going on. You might act out a little bit weird and rash, and then maybe some kind of interaction happens that ends up having you hurt or one of the cops hurt. That's swatting.
Why would they believe you weren't lying if you're lying about how many times you've been on Tucker Carlson? They have no reason to believe you.
But they wouldn't be thinking I'm lying because they would know that I wouldn't be lying about that because they know exactly how many times I've done that.
Right, three.
This can be incredibly dangerous. Russ Myers, 911 operations manager for Seattle Police, say if you use this registry, it's going to help the police, but also you.
It better informs us as a 911 center to provide that information to our responding officers. People swatting the victims are tying up valuable public safety resources when they do that.
So the registry essentially tells them in their internal records behind the scenes, hey, Jason has reported that he might be the victim of swatting. You're still supposed to treat this as an emergency, but cops going in, just be aware that there's this potential for swatting. Sometimes, depending on the circumstance, they might reach out to you proactively, say, hey, we just got this call. It depends, again, on the call and the situation. Do we need to send cops there? And so you're able to do that. Now, I've signed up for this because there are a lot of crazy people on Twitter and via email and Facebook who send me crazy, creepy things like some dude today did, including all of my information and my birthday. And like, I know who you are. Kind of creepy. So I've, you know, done this as a precaution. It is weird, the people who do this because they think it's funny, not realizing the seriousness of this kind of situation, because again, cops will show up ready to engage with a criminal suspect and everyone's going to be on edge. So if you're one of those people, for whatever reason, you might be a victim of something like this, you should go to smart911.com and sign up. Although it took me like 20 minutes. I know that I'm an idiot, but I mean, I'm the smartest person in the world, I mean. But it was hard for me to sign up. I'm told that it's since been corrected and easier.
That's going to be a fun audio clip.
Yeah. Smart911.com. Go there now. You're listening to the Jason Rancher. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. And you're listening to the Jason Rancher. When we come back, we'll tell you how Seattle is being held hostage by Tent City 3. We're going to tell you exactly what's going on and what can be done to push back. You've been listening to What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-877, I'll send you a link to my latest story about a law enforcement software that's been cut off in King County by the Sheriff's Department over activists' concern that ICE might gain access to the data and use it to deport criminal illegal immigrants because progressives in the state of Washington, for some reason, want to make it easier for criminal illegal immigrants to escape deportation. It's, yeah, I know. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-877 if you want to help me back the blue and shine a spotlight on this issue because it's incredibly important. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. There's a homeless encampment right now. It's run by an organization called Share Wheel. And they're basically holding the city of Seattle hostage because we are, frankly, feckless. Feckless in Seattle. It should be the name of like a new romantic comedy where someone's really interested in dating someone, but literally never just has the guts to ask the other person out because they're feckless. And then someone else comes in and they completely do it. And then they're like, I don't know what to do. And then complain about it in passive aggressive tweets.
Is Tom Hanks going to star in this one?
I think he's going to direct this one. It's okay. Time for him to sort of step back. We are giving in Seattle. Because that's all Seattleites know how to do, at least when we're talking about what's going on, the so-called leadership in City Hall. We've got this tent camp, Tent City 3. They've relocated from their old site because they lost their insurance coverage. And so now they just took over a piece of property near I-5 at Ravenna Park, and they're refusing to move. They refuse to move. And the city, of course, could move them. They can go in there right now and sweep this place up. They can connect these people right now with resources that will get them off of the street. But like in many cases, these are folks who don't want the help. They don't want the help. Now, if you're in a position where you don't want to take up anybody's offer of help, okay, well, then I'm no longer all that compassionate towards you. You've got compassion up until you tell me you don't want it. And they're telling me they don't want it. Okay, well, then we sweep you up. We arrest you if you don't move for trespassing, or just do the easy thing, which is take us up on our offers. We've got so many offers on the table to these folks. But rather than enforce the law, for fear that some blogger or the stranger, which no one reads anymore, might write something mean about the council member or the mayor who might back that plan, they're simply hoping that someone will step up to host these folks. Which means they're not going to do anything. Which means the people who live in the neighborhood, like Jonathan and his wife, talking with Cairo 7 TV, will end up having to avoid the area because they don't feel comfortable anymore.
I struggle with it. We'll keep on walking this way during the day, and when my wife wants to go on walks at other times of the day, she's already decided that she's going to go a different path.
Imagine being put in that position overnight because the city doesn't care about you. Because that's the truth here. The city doesn't care about Jonathan and his wife or anyone who lives in this area. They're willing to give up entire neighborhoods rather than tick off some activist who has little power but a big fat mouth. And they're willing to just say, you know what? And part of this is actually our fault. You see, do you pay taxes? I pay taxes because I know that there are consequences not to paying taxes. But what if we all just stop paying taxes? Would there actually be consequences? Something tells me they'd come after us. And yet when we're talking about this kind of lawlessness, they don't do anything. They sit back and they hope some other person will step up and resolve the problem for them because they're talking with people like this who lives at the camp.
I make too much money to qualify for programs and not enough money to live someplace, really.
Really?
If I went and rented a place right now with the income I have, that's what I would have, a place to rent and maybe be able to eat, you know? Yeah. It's expensive to live here.
So let's take what he just said at complete face value. He's 100% true, and I have no reason to not believe him. Is it possible that someone else in this camp of about 40 to 45 people, is it possible that one other person, maybe even two other people, are in similar situations than that guy? His name is Lloyd. That there are other people there who have a job. They're working. But they basically can't afford to live on their own in Seattle. See where I'm going with this? What would you do if you found two or three people in similar circumstances who can't afford to live on their own? What did you do? What did you do right after college when you decided to move out on your own? What did some of you do when you decided to leave the comfort of the city that you currently live in to get maybe a job at another city, Austin, for example, or Dallas? What are you going across the country for better, more red cities, so you think? What do? You get roommates. And Lloyd could connect with someone who's currently living in that tent city with him right now and get an apartment that he can afford. Now, yeah, it might be a little tight still, but until you get on that path officially where you're on the line having to pay that rent, where you've got the responsibilities, you're not going to have an easy way to get there. And they are getting in the way of their own success. When I can't afford to live in an area, you know what I would choose to do? Get a roommate if I wanted to live in the area. Of course, you can also choose not to live in Seattle. You do not have a right to live in the city of your choice. If you cannot afford a certain neighborhood, you don't get to live there. It is not some kind of hit at your human rights, okay? It's not some dig at your humanity. I cannot afford to live in, well, that's a bad example because I'm a talk show host who gets paid millions of millions of dollars. Producer Tom, the pittance that we pay him, he's not able to afford to live anywhere. He's going to be priced out of certain neighborhoods. And so what does he do? Does he choose to live out on the streets and complain? No, he chooses to live in a neighborhood that he can afford. That's called adulting, which is a term that millennials like to use. They usually use it in the sense of complaining. But why don't we start saying, okay, you've got some means to survive on your own. Let's connect you with someone else who, again, is maybe in the tent right over from you, 10 feet from you, who can probably afford to live in a studio or a one-bedroom or a two-bedroom in certain parts of this area if they had a roommate. It's really not all that difficult unless you don't want to be helped. And right now, there's no incentive for anyone in Seattle who's living out on the streets to actually do what they need to do to get back on a path to self-sustaining living. They have there's no incentive. They don't need to because there are no consequences if they don't. Meanwhile, producer Tom, do you know what this next story is? You know what this next story is? Say what is it?
What is it?
Bananas. It's bananas. This next, what is the story?
It's bananas.
Literally, well, I mean, it's about cocaine, but bananas are attached to it as well. Cocaine was accidentally shipped to several Safeway stores in Washington State, and they apparently were hidden in boxes of bananas.
That's bananas.
So it happened on Sunday in Woodinville. Produce workers were unpacking the when they discovered the cocaine was hidden beneath them. They found about 50 pounds of tightly packed and packaged cocaine hidden in the bottom of the boxes.
50 pounds of cocaine showing up at a tiny little local store like this. It's almost unbelievable.
So according to the King County Sheriff's Office, the cocaine had a street value of $550,000. 50 pounds of cocaine, street value of almost $500,000.
Wait, why'd she say almost unbelievable?
Well, because she's probably in on it. She's just trying to throw you off the scent. On August 18th, roughly the same amount of cocaine was found in banana boxes at a Bellingham Safeway store.
I'm sure that somebody is in a lot of trouble with somebody. I'm sure this isn't where it was intended to go.
Well, what if it was intended to go there? What does she know? This random person. This is why I love Man on the Street audio. She's just some random person talking with Cairo 7 TV. I have no clue why they decided to talk to her other than she might have just been there at the time. What does she have? What knowledge does she have on this kind of drug issue?
Saying it's almost unbelievable is like saying this rarely happens.
It's like, so when was the last time did you hear this? Oh, actually, the last time it happened, Q13 actually asked me. It was really weird because something, it wasn't cocaine. It was Molly. Gary Horker of Cairo 7 TV has the breakdown of what's next. Listen to what they have to do to try to figure out where this cocaine came from. Unless we should probably just go back to this woman because she seems to have all the answers.
This now appears to be a case where someone at a shipping port either got the wrong shipment from Central America or let the cocaine they knew was coming slip through the U.S. port for fear of getting caught. Either way, this investigation and this story is bound to get bigger because what the DEA and police have to do now is reverse trace all the bananas from these Safeways to the point of origin, and in every case, that's Central America coming up through Mexico. They're also going to try and find out where the rest of the disbursement came.
I feel bad for a number of people here. Number one, any law enforcement official who has to figure this out. Because can you imagine having to retrace each and every banana back to its point of origin? And then, I know this is bad. I kind of feel bad for the bad guy who tried to ship the drugs into this country to other bad guys, because that bad guy's probably going to be tortured now. I mean, he deserves it, I guess. Well, no, he doesn't deserve to be tortured. Or she. I'm equal opportunity.
Is that how the drug game works?
I mean, that's what they do in the movies. Like, if you screw up a shipment, all of a sudden the bad guy comes in, like the big bad guy, he comes in and he says, "You just be honest with me. Nothing's going to happen. Don't worry." Like, he just said everything. He's like, "Oh, it's okay. I'm a friend." And then you're like, "Yeah, it was my bad." And then he leans in, the bad guy says, "Can you come? Okay, so it was your bad, right? It was my bad." Then he puts his arm around him. He says, "Oh, you'll be okay." And then he pats him on the shoulder and then he sends him on his way. And then he looks to the two thugs next to him, like his bodyguards, and go, just like with a little glance. Doesn't even say anything. Just a little glance. Just a little nod. Just a little. And then all of a sudden, you get a nice little, like, subtle nod back. And then they take care of him. And they never usually show what happened. Yeah, they don't show it on screen. Sometimes they show it on screen. And it's never actually as bad as you think. It's just a shot in the head. And it's like, okay, I mean, at least it was quick.
They say quick and painless. It's probably a lot of pain associated with it.
I mean, if they screw it up. But just again, you know what that story was? You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. There is virtually no parking in the city of Everett because of what I think we can say was bad planning to a degree, right? At some point, you have to have some faith that your community is going to get more appealing to the population around you and that more people will start to try to live there. And you have to be able to forecast that kind of thing. Now, maybe they did as best as they could. Something tells me that they probably didn't, because most people in cities the size of Everett generally tend not to be able to forecast all that effectively, see what's happening in Seattle, see what appears to start happening in Tacoma. A nice exception seems to be the city of Bellevue, and then smaller cities like Sultan, I think, are doing it the right way. But right now, they clearly have a problem. People need parking. They don't have any available. And so now they're spending, the city of Everett is going to spend a whole bunch of money for a study of the parking situation. Dana Oliver of the Downtown Everett Association, he's actually the executive director, and he tells Cairo 7 TV that it's hard for people to find parking.
Every property on this map is a business improvement area customer. I think parking is the biggest concern of the businesses that exist. There's got to be some give somewhere in the system to accommodate for any retail businesses that are located in those new developments for customers to park.
So I will save them lots of money right now. This study is wholly unnecessary because the truth is they're not going to build any new parking, even though that's what they need. And they probably should start thinking about building new garage structures where they can, making them underground as deep as humanly possible, and spend the money there rather than on a study, because it's going to be expensive. So just already put the money on the study into new parking garages. But here's what they are almost certainly going to do. They're just going to look at all the free parking and say, well, the free parking is full all the time, so let's charge people for it, and then it'll force people to get out of that spot, and then we'll be able to move people in and out faster. Here's Tim Miller, the traffic engineer with the city of Everett, probably saying exactly what I just predicted.
You can see the pictures behind me show parking activity going, and you probably don't see very many empty parking spaces. We're going to look at the timing and feasibility to consider if the downtown businesses want it. a pay-to-park type of situation.
So the way he just said it, we're going to do a study to see if we feel like considering an idea that we might consider at some point if it comes up, paid parking. That's what they're going to do. And, you know, it's not that I never believe in paid parking. I think there's certainly places where that makes sense. But it should not be the first place you go to in order to, you know, cure some of your ails, right? Your ills. You should probably consider that last. And they're not. They're going to this first. And I guarantee you that that's what they end up doing. And it's not a very good strategy because it's going to still hurt the businesses. So right now, you've got the one individual who's presumably parked there for a long time because it's free. And they're spending a little bit more time in the downtown Everett area, right? They're maybe stopping for lunch. And they're taking their time maybe getting lunch. Instead of having a quick 45-minute lunch, maybe they do it 90 minutes. Well, what happens when you're there for 90 minutes? You're likely to spend a little bit more at that restaurant. And then when you don't have to rush to go back to your car because you only paid parking for an hour or for 90 minutes, what happens is you start go shopping maybe. First it starts window shopping, and then you're like, oh, that's interesting. You go into the shop, you spend some money. The longer you're there, the more likely you are to spend that money. Now, when you're forcing them to get into the car, yeah, they're still going to spend some money, but all of a sudden they're not going into that shop. They're leaving right after lunch. And yes, I suppose the person who then takes the parking spot, because now it's empty because you just caused this person to leave because of the fee, they're also going to spend some money, but they're going to spend less money. And then all of a sudden, you're not going to get some of those customers who are just sort of perusing around downtown Everett. It's going to be destination shopping. That's basically how I treat any spot that I have to get to, certainly when I had a car, would be if it's paid parking, if it's in an area that's hard to park, I'm doing destination shopping. That means I'm going in, I'm getting whatever it is as quickly as humanly possible, and then I'm leaving because I don't want to risk getting a ticket. It's not good. And every single time, and I have to assume a lot of you out there are in the exact same position. When you go to a place where you don't have to be stressed out about either finding parking or getting a ticket once you've already paid for the hour that is the limit, your whole day is just a little bit better. And when you're in a better mood, you're probably spending some more money. But right now they're saying, oh, well, you were going to study it and, you know, you can let us know what you think.
If you are somebody who shops downtown, do you eat downtown, you go for entertainment downtown, we would really like to have input from you.
Okay, so let's say every single person, they come in and they say, yeah, we don't want paid parking. Is the city of Everett going to commit to not going down that route? Just say that. They're going to put on, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of online survey that they can take, someplace that's going to give you a whole bunch of options. One of them will be paid parking. Let's say virtually no one hits the paid parking option. Do you think the city of Everett is going to commit to not going down that route? They've already decided, and I know they've already decided, not because I have any special insight into what it is they're thinking right this very moment, because they always do. Cities always present this as an option. When they do the study, what generally speaking these cities or counties or states, what they're generally looking for is data to back up what they already want to do. And sometimes they will manipulate it. Sometimes they will ask you very specific questions that is intended specifically to get you to not say what you actually want, but to say what they want you to say. And then, of course, they dishonestly and disingenuously come out there and they present to the world the data and says, oh, actually, look, you know, we went in totally open and honest. We didn't think anyone was going to want paid parking, but just 97% of the people said, yeah, they want paid parking. And it just so happens the amount they're willing to pay per hour is the highest option that we even put out there. We were very shocked by this. And so we're going to give you what you want. Now you only get hour-long parking. You got to pay for it, and it's going to cost you $8. And then everyone's scratching their head like, I mean, that's what we wanted? How many more times does this kind of thing have to happen? It's happened in Seattle a number of times. It's happened in Tacoma a number of times. This is what they do. I'm assuming, by the way, and to be fair to Everett and even Washington State, it's probably not just a Washington State problem. I'm assuming it's happening in L.A. and New York and Austin, Texas. I'm assuming that's what's happening all across the state, all across the country. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the Numbetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. In fact, if you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my brand new blog over at ktth.com, an inside look into the decision to cut a law enforcement tool. It's the Jason Rantz Show.